You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 26 April. Distell Group's last trading day as the Heineken deal concludes at the close today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Bianca Bortus from Citadel Global. Federal Reserve meeting again next week as we get back from our long weekend. Are they going to raise rates? That's consensus. The bigger picture, is this the last rate hike? That really is perhaps what we're more looking for. Nick Dennis from Anchor Global Equity. Opportunities in global markets. Interestingly, a presentation you did yesterday. There is fears everywhere, but he thinks there's opportunity. Dr. Olaf Boerter on the Ultron FinTech Household Resilience Index. It slips in the latest quarter. There's some bad data in there, but there's some actually not so bad data as well. We'll unpack all of that. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. City of Joburg loses nearly half its water, costing billions. Metro lost 3 billion rand revenue in the last year. Business day, government set to unveil huge solar rollout. Cabinet is likely to approve the procurement of 15,000 megawatts of additional green energy, according to our electricity minister, which, as I understand, currently has no power, so he's just electricity. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 1.6%, NASDAQ down 1.9%. Asia is mixed, with Sydney up 0.1% and Tokyo off 0.5%. Commodities mostly red overnight. Gold, $2,005 an ounce. Brent, $81.02 a barrel. Platinum is the green and it's been constantly edging higher, $1,109 an ounce. Palladium, $1,492. Rand, 18.30. Bitcoin, 28,400. Tencent trading up 1.8% in the Hong Kong lunch break. And top 40 looking for a red open, but 20 points to the down. That is 0.03%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Bianca Bortus. She, of course, of Citadel Global. Bianca, appreciate the time. We're, of course, heading into a long weekend with many South Africans taking off Friday. So kind of Tuesday is our next day back next week. And that's the same day that the Fed FOMC meets, Tuesday, Wednesday, around interest rates. Consensus is another 0.25% hike at the announcement Wednesday evening. Are you on the consensus? Do you agree with another 0.25% up?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, currently we are expecting a 25 basis point rate hike by the Fed at that upcoming FOMC meeting, with officials really remaining very hawkish in their views and reiterating the fact that the Fed will likely hike rates until they get to a point closer to 2% in inflation. Now, we know we are quite a stretch away from that 2% target level, and the Fed has been very hawkish. But when we start looking at the Fed funds rate, for instance, it tells a little bit of a different story.
And that other story is, because, I mean, the next meeting will be mid-June, which is some 6 weeks later. Certainly expectations are that they will halt at this point. But to your point, I mean, we're a long way from 2%. And even when we get to the June meeting, when we'll have April and May inflation data, we're not going to be, I mean, surely the US isn't even going to be at 4%, never mind 5%.
We're definitely not going to be close to the 2% target level. However, there are other factors playing a role here that needs to be considered. So, for instance, yesterday consumer confidence was released out of the US, and that's sitting at a 9-month low. And market actually repositioned, with the Fed funds futures now indicating a mere 76% chance of a 25 basis point rate hike for May. And that's down from 90% probability last week. So markets definitely adjusting for the change in conditions in the US. And also adding to that is the fact that the regional banks are under strain, with First Republic Bank reporting a drop in their deposits of over $100 billion. So markets are really going, the Fed might not be close to where they want to be in terms of inflation target levels. However, they feel that the US economy could enter a recession closer to the end of the year. But in addition to that, there is a lot of emphasis on the banking sector and what these continued increased interest rates could do to the rest of the regional banks.
That's a good point, because that was the concern at the last meeting back in March, which was just after Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank and others were essentially hitting the wall. And there was a view that they might turn their eye to the economy. The Fed is really focused on inflation, but they can't ignore particularly the banking system. I mean, we've seen what happened in 2008, 2009, when the banking system starts to creak.
Absolutely. So the Fed will definitely keep an eye on that. They'll keep an eye on economic performance, because in effect, the moment that you see economic performance decline and you see the labor market loosening up, consumer sentiment starts dropping, you can assume that inflation decreases will soon follow suit, because you need people to be spending money on the ground to drive inflation.
I take your point on that. It's almost in the sense that forward-looking and understanding what will happen. We'll leave it there. Bianca Botha, Citadel Global. That FOMC announcement Wednesday next week, 8 p.m. our time. Bianca, appreciate the early morning insights.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Nick Dennis. He manages the Anchor Global Equity Fund. Nick, appreciate the time. A presentation you did yesterday around how the market is spooked. And it's actually weird. I was talking with a friend yesterday and saying to him, you know what, there's certainly value out there, but the fear is at elevated levels. I mean, one of your slides was headed, you know, no love for equities. The other, the end of the world is nigh again. There certainly is pessimism, and in some cases, fairly extreme pessimism out there in global equity markets.
Morning, Simon. I mean, absolutely. So this shows up in survey data, and it shows up in investor positioning. So it's not the kind of fear that you see right at the end of the capitulation phase in the bear market, like in maybe sort of March 2009. But it's certainly very, very pessimistic. And with good reason. I mean, there is plenty to worry about. Inflation has been sticky. You've got a tight Fed, and so it's not without cause that people are feeling cautious. But I guess my point yesterday was, to the extent that it's positioned for, and it's already expected, it's less of a risk from an equity market perspective.
That's a great point. If everyone's out there expecting it and acting accordingly and worried, et cetera, it means it's kind of in the price. And it does mean that there are, I mean, there's some really chunky valuations out there as a result because of that fear. And often that's when the real opportunity comes.
I think so. So look, at the overall market level, it's not... I wouldn't say it's cheap. So there's perhaps a paradox. Mm. So I'm saying it's not at the overall market level, it's not stupendously cheap, but people are positioned cautiously. Mm-hmm. And look, even if, you know, could things get worse? Could outcomes be worse than the consensus expects? Yes.
Sure.
But even in that case, you know, if we were to see the kind of waterfall capitulation, and the economy got really bad, you would have to think that the policy response would be equally vociferous. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I look at that setup and say, you know, net-net, it probably makes sense to lean more on the bullish side.
And the other side, which was China, cheapest chips. And I've been chatting around China a bunch, probably over the last 6 months with commentators. There certainly has been the one view. I mean, there's some folks who look at China and say uninvestable. There's another view which says, you know what, it there's always risk in the investing world. And there's some quality. I mean, you look at, you're comparing forward PEs, Amazon versus sort of Alibaba, JD.com and the like. And there are some real value in some of these stocks.
Yeah, so I think I'm certainly not a structural China bull. I think there's plenty of reasons to be concerned. Mm-hmm. I probably also take the view that China is more from my perspective, is more tradable than investable. Like, this is not a set it and forget it decision. But to your point, like, I think the risk reward and or sort of the upside relative to the downside setup is really attractive. I think the potential exists for you to make a lot of money in these shares relative to the potential downside exists. So, and that's kind of all you're looking for as an investor, for an attractive setup. And I think, you know, you don't need a lot to go right for you to make a lot of money in these shares.
That's a great point. And I liked your point there around, you know, you don't need to be a big long-term China bull. You can see some opportunity there and say, well, hang on, these are cheap. Yes, there's downside risk. There always is. But that downside risk is perhaps more limited. And it becomes, you know, what is my potential payoff versus my potential downside? Because truthfully, none of us know the future. It's about managing that risk more than anything.
Absolutely. And even if you look at the case of Japan over the last 20 to 30 years, the market has done nothing, but there have been some fabulous bottom-up opportunities in that market. And I think China could be the same.
Sorry, carry on.
And I would say there's also, shorter term, there are some tailwinds. So I think you've got the tailwind from the economic reopening after the really draconian COVID lockdowns. And then the central bank wants to stimulate, and they're pumping credit into the market. So I think you've got a window where you could see earnings reaccelerating. So from a kind of from a tactical perspective, there I think the setup should be quite good.
And even taking it back to the US, I mean, a stock you put up there was Cloudflare. And I remember when Cloudflare hit some $200 sort of late 2021, and I was chatting with someone, and it was just like, you know, this is a great business, but this is not a great price for that business. And we've seen a number of those tech stocks and those really quality assets come back markedly, and again, offering some opportunity there, notwithstanding there's risk. There's always risk out there.
Yeah, so I think with Cloudflare is a great example. If you look at the ARK ETF, which run by Cathie Wood, as a kind of a proxy for mid cap growth, it is completely unwound all of the gains that it made in 2020, 2021. And I'm looking at the chart now, it's sitting below its COVID lows. So a lot of these companies were never cheap to begin with, but you know, they did become ridiculously expensive, and now they've sort of unwound that and then some. So they've still got a bright future ahead of them. I still think a bunch of these names could become multi-baggers. I think Cloudflare sits in that camp potentially. So now again, it's I don't think it would take much for you to do really well out of these shares over a 2 to 3 to 5 year horizon.
Yeah, and in the case of ARK, and I'm looking at that chart, you're basically back at where it was 5 years ago, yet these companies are bigger. They've grown their revenue. In some cases, they've even cut their cost base more recently with layoffs and the like. We'll leave that there. Nick Dennis, he's the fund manager at the Anchor Global Equity Fund. Nick, appreciate the early morning insights.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Dr. Olaf Boerte around the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index. This is for the fourth quarter of 2022. Olaf, appreciate the early morning time again. The index, and if we look at it quarter on quarter, ticked up. But if we look at the four-quarter average, it has been trending lower for five quarters in a row now since that peak in Q3 of 2021, which I suppose is not a massive surprise and does tell the story of load shedding, of increasing inflation, increasing interest rates, and putting pressure on households.
Yes, fun without a shadow of doubt. And it's interesting that the Monetary Policy Committee of the South African Reserve Bank started raising rates, this index started dropping. But there have been some pretty interesting developments as far as households, the median households' reaction to the higher interest rates are concerned. And maybe just before I forget, sure. You know, What listeners probably don't appreciate is that measured against prime, the South African Reserve Bank has now increased the cost of capital and the cost of credit by more than 60% since the fourth quarter of 2021. I mean, this is, in a nutshell, this is crazy economics.
It absolutely is. And, you know, we think of it in the numbers, but as you point out, I mean, literally, your home loan has gone through the roof over the last, year and a half. And to the data points that absolutely talk to that is, you know, long-term insurance surrenders up markedly year on year, civil debt defaults up markedly year on year. That just shows us a South African consumer who is truthfully scrambling. I mean, you know, I appreciate you can look at long-term insurance and say, I'll take that risk. But let's be clear, you're taking that risk and it's not an easy decision for an individual.
Yes. I mean, 27% year-on-year increase in the real value of long-term insurance surrenders. This is frightening. The last time this happened to this extent was with the Marikana incident. And it's a sign of people cashing in. Fortunately, there's a bit of a reciprocal year because the official pension fund lump sum payments declined by 30%. It's almost the same. By the same degree. So it does seem as if people have, you know, for cash flow purposes, they've cashed in on some of their policy, but now they've decided not to retire and they're going to work longer, which is a very prudent financial decision, because why should you retire at a certain age if you have significant experience and you're still of sound mind and body?
Yeah, that 65 years old, they send you home for what might be 30 years, and that's a lot of sitting on your porch watching the world go by. I mean, one of the trends, total formal non-agricultural employment, that is up. That is at the best levels since Q1 of 2020, i.e. pre-pandemic. The point, and that ties in with what we see from Stats SA. The point being is that, yes, we're seeing more people employed. No, we're not seeing enough, and we're not even back at pre-pandemic levels, never mind whittling away. I mean, unemployment, and we've chatted about this before, remains perhaps one of the biggest challenges in our economy.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, the Reserve Bank itself has admitted that for every basis, 50 basis points increase or 25, whatever measure they use, there is a decline. There's a positive correlation between the raising the interest rate and effectively unemployment, because the economy, they know that the economy will economic growth will shrink. And to raise interest rates at a time when there is no demand inflation in the economy, our inflation rate of 7.1% is entirely related to regulated prices plus cost push inflation, especially the lingering effect of the 700% increase in global freight shipping rates. Now, I don't know why the Monetary Policy Committee think that they can convince world freight shipping companies to lower their rates. It's not going to happen. They're not going to, you know, scare themselves, get scared silly because we've raised our prime rate. It's just a silly and unnecessary intervention.
And you make a really, really great point here. So we've got an inflation target. The world all over has inflation targets. These things didn't exist 30 years ago. The numbers that are our target bands are, I'm sure some committee sat down and came up with them, but they're so written in stone, yet actually they're arbitrary numbers. And if we just took if Saab just said, you know what, there's external circumstances here, let's shift that target perhaps to 4 to 7% rather than 3 to 6, suddenly we could take a percent off our repo rate.
Yes, in fact, well spotted, Simon. I agree with you 100%. In fact, I was around, and I knew him personally, when Chris Tulse, the previous governor of the Reserve Bank, actually implemented the inflation target. And the point was made specifically that this target range is not cast in concrete. So in benevolent circumstances with satisfactory growth and relatively low inflation, we could have had a situation, if it had not been for Mr. Jacob Zuma and his band of thieves and state capture, and the COVID pandemic, that we had for a significant period of time relatively low inflation, and they could have brought the target range down. We did not have that. We had the opposite. We had huge problems also with regard to structural inflation. And all they needed to do was to raise temporarily the target range. And then we could have had, we could have spared households with mortgage bonds literally billions of rand every year in terms of higher mortgage bond payments. Now, that money is not being spent in the economy.
Yeah.
So this is really a sign that they don't really understand the nature of inflation or the whole theory surrounding inflation targets. They are not, and they've never been designed to be cast in concrete.
Yeah, and it is. And those billions, as you say, would go into the economy and help the economy, help the households, help the economy. We'll leave it there. Dr. Olaf Botha, always appreciate the early morning insights. That's it for today. We were chatting with Sean Nethlin yesterday from Morningstar Investments SA. We're talking around the rand and potentially bringing some dollars back, as he says, at this point in the cycle. Probably we're going to see rand strength over time. I asked you, do you return offshore funds as the rand weakens? 3/4 of you said nope. What's offshore stays offshore. The rest was split between, yeah, you bring some back, but carefully, and the rest of you saying, nope, you are always buying dollars, never returning. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. No show tomorrow for Freedom Day. We've got a recorded show Friday. We'll have Charles Savage.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.